So imagine you're trying to run a restaurant.
Okay.
But the number of customers fluctuates wildly by the hour.
Right.
And your kitchen is located in the middle of the ocean.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And like a single spilled drink could cost you millions of dollars or, you know, cause a massive environmental disaster.
That is a very high-stress restaurant.
Right. Well, welcome to today's deep dive. It is Tuesday, May 5th, 2026, and we are looking at a document that on the surface it sounds like a pretty dry human resources manual.
Yeah, it really does at first glance.
But it's actually this ultimate masterclass in how to manage pure chaos.
Yeah.
We're pulling from Integrated Workforce Strategies for Global Oil and Gas Operations. And our mission today for you, the listener, is to extract the playbook for running a massive high-risk operation when the ground underneath you...
Sometimes literally.
Yeah, sometimes literally, is constantly shifting.
Yeah, and if you want to understand this document, you really have to look at the impossible math equation these energy companies are trying to solve every single day. You can't just put up a help wanted sign and hope for the best. I mean, the industry operates under three massive, unyielding constraints that are honestly constantly fighting each other.
Okay, let's unpack this. What are the three constraints?
So first, you have to source highly specialized labor in incredibly remote or harsh environments.
Like the middle of the ocean.
Exactly. Second is the absolute necessity of operational uptime. Upstream, midstream, downstream. I mean, the operation cannot simply pause.
Because every minute a facility is down,
right.
What astronomical sums of money evaporate.
Oh, completely. It's staggering. And then third, you have this unforgiving compliance with safety and environmental regulations.
So it's basically a three-way tug of war.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Like if you pull too hard on uptime without the right specialized labor, your safety standards just snap.
Right. And if you focus only on environmental compliance, but you don't actually have the people on site to run the valves, well, your uptime dies.
Wow. So how do they even handle that?
Well, the result of those competing forces is an ecosystem that has to prioritize predictability and adaptability over simple headcount fulfillment. You are never just, you know, filling chairs.
Right. Because of those three unyielding constraints, traditional hiring, like the way most of us experience it, where you get hired for a job, you sit at a desk, and you stay there for 5 years, that completely fails in this environment.
Completely falls apart.
Yeah, the text makes a really direct causal connection between workforce volatility and operational disaster.
Yeah, because oil and gas companies, they operate within these extreme macroeconomic cycles.
Like commodity prices shifting overnight.
Exactly. Prices shift based on global events or, say, a massive new capital investment gets greenlit. Suddenly, the company faces this violent spike in exploration or drilling activity.
Oh, the opposite happens.
Right. They enter a brutal cycle of shutdowns and decommissioning.
The stakes here are fascinating, obviously. The document breaks down the domino effect of getting this balance even slightly wrong.
And it is a steep drop-off.
Yeah. Like, if you're listening to this and thinking, well, my company uses temp workers, it's not that hard. You have to remember that in this industry, a temp worker making a mistake doesn't mean, like, a typo in a spreadsheet.
No, it means a blowout.
Right. If you are understaffed, you don't just have a stressful Tuesday. People are rushed, they skip protocols, and you get severe safety incidents.
But if you overstaff just to be safe, you are burning millions on idle labor.
Wow.
And beyond just the number of bodies on a rig, there's the skill mismatch.
Oh, like putting the wrong person on the wrong machine.
Yeah. Rushing to put a mechanic on a specialized piece of machinery when they don't have the exact current competency for that specific model that leads to equipment damage.
And jamming a critical component can force a total operational shutdown.
Exactly. Add to that the regulatory compliance gaps. I mean, if the workforce strategy doesn't rigorously track every single worker's certifications in real time, the company triggers immediate regulatory penalties.
Like mandatory site closures.
Yeah, immediate closures.
Wait, let me push back on this for a second.
Sure.
If demand spikes because of, say, some new geopolitical shift, and they know they need 100 engineers and riggers immediately, why can't they just call up a massive temp agency to fill the gaps?
I mean, they could, but...
Why do they need this entire complex workforce architecture?
What's fascinating here is that calling a temp agency is a purely transactional move. It focuses entirely on just filling an individual role. You need a welder, right? The agency sends a welder.
Okay, sounds simple.
It is, but that provides zero strategic value. It has minimal technology integration, limited flexibility, and relies on, like, manual compliance management.
Which is too slow.
Way too slow. In a high-risk environment, throwing a bunch of disconnected temps onto a rig is literally a recipe for disaster.
Oh, because the temp agency isn't tracking whether that welder is fatigued from their last job.
Exactly. Or if their specific offshore survival certification just expired yesterday.
Right. So modern workforce solutions aren't just about hiring. They're about managing an entire ecosystem end-to-end.
Yes.
The text describes this in a way that reminds me less of human resources and more of, like, high-level finance.
Oh, that's an interesting comparison.
It's like they are financializing human labor to hedge against risk.
That is an excellent way to conceptualize it, actually. To survive the volatility trap, the industry relies on four distinct staffing models, and they blend them to build a resilient portfolio.
Okay, break this down for me.
First, you have the permanent staff. Think of them as your low-risk government bonds.
Okay, the stable foundation.
Right. These are your site supervisors, safety officers, core maintenance personnel. They provide the institutional knowledge, the leadership stability, and really the anchor for your operational standards.
But you can't afford to have your entire workforce be permanent bonds when the actual work fluctuates so much. You need options. You need, like, flex muscle.
Yes, the flex muscle. That is the second model. Contract and contingent labor.
So these are the temps we were talking about, but managed differently.
Right. This flex muscle absorbs the shock of those short-term spikes. Drilling campaigns, turnarounds, temporary infrastructure builds.
So contract workers allow the company to respond immediately to demand surges without taking on massive long-term financial liability.
Exactly.
But now you've created a totally new problem.
How so?
Well, you have your permanent anchor staff, right? And then you have dozens of different contractors from completely different agencies all showing up to the exact same site.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like an administrative nightmare. How do you stop them from just tripping over each other?
It is a nightmare. And the solution to that fragmentation is the third model, managed workforce programs.
Okay.
This acts like your portfolio manager. A managed program centralizes all of it. Labor procurement, onboarding, compliance tracking, and performance oversight are forced into a single visible structure.
Usually through some kind of software, right?
Yeah, usually through a vendor management system.
Okay, which means the ultimate goal for these large-scale operations is the fourth model.
Right, the hybrid workforce model.
Right. The perfect diversified portfolio, blending the permanent anchor and the contingent flex muscle, all operating under one unified framework.
It is basically the only architectural structure that balances the institutional stability needed for safety with the extreme flexibility required to survive economic cycles.
But merging those two groups creates a massive, pretty obvious danger.
Which is?
When you have permanent staff who have been there for 5 years, rotating contractors who just flew in yesterday, and specialized experts all physically mixing on a high-risk site, the potential for miscommunication is lethal.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you prevent catastrophic accidents when your workforce is this fragmented?
Well, if the company does not actively solve for that lethal mixing pot, the entire hybrid model collapses under the weight of its own risk.
Yeah.
The document is incredibly clear on this point. Safety failures are rarely isolated flukes.
Right.
When something goes wrong on a rig or a refinery, it originates from systemic workforce gaps.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Safety in this document isn't described as, like, a poster in the break room saying 30 days without an accident.
Right, or a boring safety briefing at the start of the week.
Exactly. It is an embedded architectural system.
The system essentially assumes human error is inevitable.
Which it is.
Yeah, especially among a rotating cast of workers dealing with severe fatigue and complex communication handoffs. So the architecture must step in.
How does it do that?
It starts long before a worker steps on site with continuous certification verification. But in the field, it is governed by rigid, almost unforgiving mechanisms.
Like what?
Take the digital permit to work systems. A worker cannot just walk up to a piece of heavy equipment and start a maintenance routine because their supervisor asked them to.
Hold on. Are you telling me a $1 billion drilling campaign will physically lock a welder out of his equipment because an algorithm says so?
Yes, absolutely.
Do the site managers actually listen to that, or do they just, you know, bypass the system to meet their daily production quota?
You cannot bypass it.
Wait, really?
Yeah, the system is designed specifically to remove the site manager's discretion entirely.
Oh, wow.
The digital permit verifies that the individual scanning their badge is currently certified. that the physical area has been cleared of conflicting operations, and that the operational phase aligns perfectly with the task.
So it is a literal digital lock on the work itself.
Yes. It takes the decision-making completely out of the hands of someone who might be stressed or in a rush.
That makes total sense.
And alongside that, you have competency-based role assignments. This ensures workers are matched to tasks based on verified system-logged skills, not just, you know, who happens to be standing nearby and available.
Right. And driving all of this is the strict fatigue management scheduling.
Because a tired worker is a dangerous worker.
Regardless of how many advanced certifications they hold.
Exactly. And this goes far beyond a manager just noticing someone looks sleepy.
It is a mathematical scheduling engine tracking consecutive hours worked, shift patterns, and mandated rest periods across all those different permanent and contract workforce models.
Just ensuring no single human exceeds their safe operational limits.
Exactly.
Which immediately brings up a staggering logistical problem.
Just one.
Well, the main one. If you have thousands of workers rotating in and out, taking on different shifts, yeah, requiring different digital permits for different tasks, and you have to track their fatigue levels and their certifications in real time.
Right.
No supervisor with a clipboard can do that.
Oh, it is entirely beyond human capability. I mean, the sheer volume of data points generated every hour by a hybrid workforce necessitates a massive leap into a highly sophisticated technology stack. Right. Without this central nervous system, the hybrid model and the safety architecture are just, well, purely theoretical concepts that would fail on day one.
Okay, wait. The document outlines this centralized data environment, but it throws an absolute alphabet soup of tech systems at the reader.
Oh, yeah, it really does.
We've got WFM, VMS, HCM, FSM. I mean, I feel like I'm drowning in acronyms here.
It can be a lot to take in.
So let's ground this. If I am Sarah, a specialized contract welder arriving on the helipad for a 2-week shift, which system am I actually interacting with, and like, how do they talk to each other?
Okay, let's trace Sarah's journey. Before she even boarded the helicopter, her agency interacted with the VMS, the vendor management system.
Okay, VMS.
This is the procurement engine. It verified her agency's contract, checked her base credentials, and authorized her deployment.
So the VMS is basically the bouncer at the door.
Exactly. Now, once she is in the ecosystem, her data flows into the HCM.
The human capital management system.
Right. This holds her deep compliance records, her medical clearances, and her specific skill certifications. The HCM is really the ultimate source of truth for who she is and what she is legally allowed to do.
Got it. But then she actually has to do the work.
And that is where the WFM, the workforce management system, takes over. The WFM handles the complex fatigue scheduling, the time tracking, and the actual allocation of her labor across different shifts.
So VMS hires her, HCM verifies her, WFM schedules her.
Exactly. And finally, when she walks out onto the rig floor to fix a valve, she interacts with the FSM.
The Field Service Management System.
Right. The FSM coordinates the specific physical task, issuing the digital permit to work we discussed earlier, ensuring, say, the valve is depressurized before she even touches it.
Okay, so just to recap, the VMS hires her, the HCM verifies her, the WFM schedules her, and the FSM unlocks the tools for her.
You got it. And the true power of this stack isn't that these systems exist independently.
No.
No, the power is the real-time integration. The FSM will not issue the digital permit to Sarah if the WFM flags that she has been working for 14 hours.
Oh, wow.
Or if the HCM notes her welding certification expired at midnight. They take a highly reactive, dangerous physical environment and force it into predictive workforce planning.
Which perfectly sets up the most mind-blowing piece of technology mentioned in the text.
Yeah.
The digital twin systems.
Yes.
When I was reading this, I instantly thought of, like, playing a massively complex game of The Sims or SimCity.
That's a great analogy.
But instead of building a virtual neighborhood, they are simulating real workforce deployment and asset interaction on a billion-dollar oil rig.
Right. A digital twin basically models the exact physical environment of the facility and superimposes the real-time workforce data directly over it.
So it's literally like The Sims, where if you click on a worker, their energy bar or their skill level is hovering above their head.
Basically, yeah.
And the system knows that if you assign a fatigued worker with a low skill level to a high-pressure valve, the risk of a critical failure jumps by, say, 40%.
Exactly. The simulation allows the operation to run purely on optimization metrics. Yeah. And optimization in this industry is the perfect alignment between human labor and physical asset utilization.
Okay, let's run a hypothetical scenario to see how this actually works.
Sure.
Say a massive storm rolls in and delays the incoming shift's helicopter by 12 hours.
Happens all the time.
In the old days, a site manager would just panic and force the current crew to pull a double shift, skyrocketing the safety risk. What does the digital twin do?
Well, the moment the helicopter delay is logged, the digital twin instantly runs thousands of simulations.
Wow.
It looks at the WFM to see the current fatigue levels of the workers already on site. It checks the FSM to identify which maintenance tasks are critical for uptime and which can be delayed.
Okay.
It then dynamically reroutes the workforce in real time.
So it adjusts everything on the fly.
Yeah. It might isolate the three most critical tasks, assign them to the least fatigued workers with the exact HCM certifications required, and automatically lock out all other non-essential equipment so no tired worker can even attempt a risky task.
That is incredible. It guarantees that no highly paid, specialized crew is standing around waiting for equipment, and no machine is offline because the guy with the right certification wasn't scheduled properly.
Exactly. They are constantly tracking labor utilization rates, productivity per labor hour, and downtime attributable specifically to workforce issues.
So every single efficiency is mathematically squeezed out of the operation, all while maintaining that rigid safety compliance.
Every decision is audited by the data.
Wow. So we've built this incredibly complex, perfectly optimized, integrated software system. Now, let's push it to its absolute breaking point.
Okay, let's tip it.
Because maintaining this delicate web of technology, scheduling, and safety is hard enough at a facility,
right,
you know, just outside of Houston.
Right.
So what does this all mean when you drop this entire ecosystem into the middle of the freezing tundra or on a platform 100 miles offshore?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, geography changes the fundamental rules of the game.
Yeah, I'd imagine so.
Remote and offshore operations represent the extreme edge cases where the physical environment itself becomes your primary constraint. You are facing logistical nightmares that onshore facilities simply do not comprehend.
The document details some staggering constraints, like
yeah.
You have highly limited access to medical or emergency services.
Yeah.
Transportation logistics alone are a nightmare. You rely entirely on specialized ships or helicopters just to get people to the job site.
Mm.
And once they are there, the isolation is profound.
Which is why the workforce solutions have to adapt, or the friction of that isolation will literally tear the operation apart.
Right.
You cannot run standard 8-hour shifts when commuting takes 3 hours by air.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what's the solution?
The solution is the strict rotational staffing model.
The text mentions 14-14 or 21-21 schedules.
Right.
So a worker is flown out to the rig, works intense 12-hour shifts for 14 days straight, and then they're flown back to civilization for 14 days of complete rest.
Yeah. And managing that rotational cycle means you need two complete, perfectly synchronized workforces for every single operational role.
Because when Team A finishes their 14 days and flies out, Team B must step in immediately.
Without missing a beat.
But let's focus on that specific moment of the handoff. How do you actively manage the friction of that transition?
It's definitely a vulnerable moment.
I mean, Team A has been dealing with the quirks of a specific pump for 2 weeks. They overlap with Team B on the helipad for maybe 2 hours. How does the company guarantee all that localized, immediate knowledge is transferred before Team A's helicopter takes off?
That is where the integrated tech stack proves its worth. The transfer of institutional knowledge isn't relying on a tired worker shouting instructions over the roar of helicopter blades.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. The field service management system has already logged every anomaly, every digital permit, and every maintenance note Team A executed.
Okay. So it's all in the system.
Exactly. The workforce management system guarantees that when Team B logs in, their dashboards are already populated with the exact operational state of the rig. The system manages the friction, not the humans.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
But dropping these humans into the middle of nowhere requires a rigorous pre-deployment phase, too. They don't just, like, check your welding certificate.
Yeah, no.
The company mandates intense pre-deployment health and competency screenings.
Because a minor medical issue onshore is an inconvenience. A minor medical issue when you are a 3-hour helicopter ride from the nearest hospital is an operational crisis.
Yeah, that's a huge liability.
Absolutely. You have to build in robust on-site accommodation and medical support systems. You are effectively running a self-sustaining high-tech hotel alongside a massive industrial operation.
And there is one vulnerability that ties all of this together.
The comms.
Because that entire tech stack, the digital twins, the VMS, the real-time permit systems, it relies entirely on constant data streams. You must have massive redundant communication infrastructures.
If a storm knocks out the satellite link, the operation doesn't just lose the ability to send emails. Mm-hmm. The digital twin goes blind. The fatigue management system stops updating. The digital permit-to-work system cannot verify an expiring certification in the HCM.
So if the comms go down, the risk matrix explodes instantly.
It's terrifying, honestly.
Every piece of this puzzle relies heavily on every other piece. You can't run the hybrid workforce without the technology. You can't trust the technology without the standardized compliance. Mm-hmm. And you cannot survive the remote offshore environments without all of it working flawlessly together in real time.
It is a profound ecosystem of absolute control imposed upon inherent volatility.
So, bringing it all together, where does this massive hyper-tracked ecosystem go next?
Yeah.
The final part of the source text gives us a glimpse into the immediate future state of these operations, and it centers on convergence.
Yeah. The document concludes by pointing toward the deep integration of workforce systems with automation and predictive intelligence.
Okay.
The industry is moving entirely away from static planning. The data from the asset's mechanical performance, the environmental safety monitors, and the human labor tracking are merging into one single stream of operational intelligence.
Which leaves me with this thought for you, the listener.
Yeah.
We started by talking about the chaos of running a restaurant in the middle of the ocean. Imagine if that restaurant's computer system knew the chef was going to drop a plate 5 minutes before they actually did, purely based on micro fluctuations in their schedule, their heart rate data, and past performance metrics.
It sounds like science fiction, but it's here.
If these oil and gas systems are converging to the point where data perfectly predicts risk, we are approaching a future where a predictive algorithm monitoring your digital twin automatically locks you out of a dangerous task.
Wow.
Because it knows you are fatigued before your own brain even realizes it.
Yeah.
It is an invisible safety net built of pure data.
It really represents a monumental shift from just managing workers to algorithmically protecting them from their own human limitations.
And it makes you wonder how much of our own daily work lives, even far outside the extreme world of oil and gas, are about to be managed by this exact kind of predictive architecture.
That's a great question.
What happens when the software at your office tracks your keystrokes and automatically locks you out of a sensitive financial spreadsheet because the algorithm decides you didn't sleep enough last night? Something to think about the next time you log into your workstation. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems running the world around you, and we'll catch you next time.